We will be in Judges chapter 9. If you remember, we were left off a couple of weeks ago. Thanks to Reese last week for coming and sharing his work that he is doing right now, preparing to go to mission in a very hard place, not even knowing where it is, but just thankful that Reese could be here last Sunday. Judges will be in chapter 9, like I said, verses 22 to 41, which that is part of the Gideon story, if you remember. It's actually part of the story of Gideon's son, named Ahimelech, but it is really a continuation of the story. So this morning, Pastor Randy shared memories of his father, how he got the love for the Cubs and love for basketball from his father, and Doug got the love for hunting and fishing. Neither one was a complete picture of their dad, but they both illustrate this. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Ahimelech also demonstrates that the apple does not fall far from the tree, but in a much different, completely different way. So Kenneth Way put it this way, that Ahimelech was just like his father in all the worst possible ways. Gideon had the ambition to be king. Ahimelech killed to be king. Gideon was violent, vindictive, just like his son was violent and vindictive. Gideon killed his own people. Ahimelech killed his own brothers. So Gideon and Ahimelech are examples of how the Lord visits the iniquity of the fathers on their sons. A little different perspective on Father's Day here in Judges. But that's where we are in this story. The theme of Judges, you know, is that Israel becomes like Canaan. And we are, as we go through that, to notice that and make sure that doesn't happen to us. Daniel Block says about chapter 9 in this book, it's clear from chapter 9 that Israel has become totally Canaanized. They are already just like Canaan. And the leaders, their leaders are a big part of that. But so were the people. It's like they were synergistically working in order to become like Canaan, like a spiral, becoming more and more Canaanized. So Judges 9, it's a long chapter, 57 verses. As we talked about last time, planning on spending 3 Sunday nights on that. This is how I set out the plan to cover it. So Ahimelech's reign over Shechem, that's where he becomes king, and the leaders, he conspired along with the leaders of that city to kill his brothers, and they executed the plan, and that's how he became king. We covered that last time. So we broke those 21 verses down into 3 parts about how this thing got started, how he ended up killing his 70 brothers, except for one. Remember, one escaped. His name was Jotham. And then he tells his fable, and by the end of the story, he explains it, and it's a blessing and a curse. But verse 5 reads like this, "And Ahimelech went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal, 70 men on one stone, but Jotham, the youngest of the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left because he hid himself, And then at the end of, just right before the end of the first part of Judges 9, we have this. Jotham giving from Mount Gerizim a blessing. If you then have acted in good faith and integrity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. And then this curse. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Bet Milo, and let fire come out from the leaders of Shechem and from Bet Milo and devour Abimelech. In other words, let them destroy each other. And that's, as I mentioned last time, that's a good preview of what happens for the rest of this chapter. So we'll move on to the second part, which is this: God sends an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. So we'll divide this into four parts as well, based on it. It's broke at the same place for as the ESV paragraph breaks, so we'll use that. So each paragraph, then we'll just read it. And then go back and discuss it. So again, another very, very long section. So we'll start right in with reading Judges 9, 22 to 25. Abimelech ruled over Israel 3 years, and God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. And the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. And the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops, and they robbed all who passed by them along the way. And it was told to Abimelech. Okay, so here we go. The purpose of God sending an evil spirit in these first few verses. Abimelech ruled over Israel 3 years. So, in Judges 9:6, it said that all the leaders of Shechem, along with Bet Milo, the town of Bet Milo, which is nearby, they went and they made Abimelech king at Shechem. There's no mention, no effort of Israel at this point making him their king. Israel overall, just these two towns. But here, they've apparently been successful in making him king, because he ruled over Israel, it says, for 3 years. Now, it doesn't mean every part of Israel was conquered by Abimelech and he ran it all the same way, but it's characterized. The country is characterized by this ruler. This is their ruler. His kingship was based on his relationship with his mother, who lived in Shechem. So it was his mother's relatives that got these things going so that he could be made king. He ruled over Israel. Notice it doesn't say he was king over Israel. He wasn't actually king over Israel, but he ruled over Israel for 3 years. If it were like the rest of the judges, you would expect it to say something like this: then the Lord raised up Abimelech, who saved Israel out of the hand of those who plundered him. But that's not the case here. The Lord didn't appoint Abimelech to save Israel. He was more like an oppressor than a judge. And God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. So when you read that, God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem, What do you think of? What do you read? What do you see there? What do you hear when it says that? Well, probably gonna have a wide variety in this room. Well, spirit has more than one meaning. Let's just put that out there. Evil has more than one meaning. The words for evil and the words for spirit have more than one meaning. Just think about what you know. The spirit can be the spirit of God. The spirit can be a being. The spirit can be part of you, your spirit. You can have a broken spirit. So just notice the variety of things that spirit can mean. Evil also has more than one meaning. It can mean sin, iniquity, doing things that are morally evil. It can also mean an earthquake. It can mean a disaster. It can mean things like that. It can just mean the general idea of something bad happened. So if you, most of the translations that you have, that you're reading tonight, are going to say something along the lines of God sent an evil spirit. There's one of the major translations that doesn't say that, NIV. And it says, God stirred up animosity between Avimelech and the leaders of Shechem, or something like that. The Jewish translation says, God sent a spirit of discord between them. So let's just look at the next verse, because I think it's informative. I think it helps us understand what it means when it says God, or what God's purpose was for sending this spirit, will help us to understand what it means. And the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come. So again, and the leaders, so God sent an evil spirit between Avimelech and the leaders of Shechem, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid on Avimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. That's the purpose, that God sent this evil spirit, so that the violence done to those sons would be paid back. Essentially, that would actually come on those who were responsible for it. So back to verse 23. And God sent an evil spirit between Avimelech and the leaders of Shechem. So if you think about other places in Scripture, actually not very far from Judges, God sends an evil spirit somewhere else. And it's more, it happens more than once, but this is from 1 Samuel, you'll probably recognize it. This is 1 Samuel 16, starting in verse 14. I'll read 14 to 16. Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. And here's what the ESV says. And a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him. Same exact Hebrew words. Evil spirit, harmful spirit. Exact same words. And a harmful spirit from Saul. And most of our versions say that. Some of them, or something like that. I think New American Standard might say evil. Saul's servant said to him, behold now, a harmful spirit from God is tormenting you. Now look how it can be relieved. Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you to seek a man who is skillful in playing the lyre. And when the harmful spirit from God is upon you, he will play it, and you will be well. In chapter 18, mentions this spirit, this harmful spirit again. Here's what it says. And you'll recognize this. This is right after the battle of, this is right after David kills Goliath. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, Saul has struck down his thousands and David his ten thousands. And Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. And he said, They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands, and what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day. And Saul had his spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David evaded him twice. Same thing, right? Same exact Hebrew words are used to describe what was going on with Saul. Some kind of thing to put animosity between Avimelech here and the leaders of Shechem. That's what's in view here as well. And the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Avimelech. That means they went against their understanding, or what they had agreed to do, which was to make him king. So they dealt treacherously with him. As it said at the end of the story with Gideon, they did not show steadfast love, covenant faithfulness to the family of Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, in return for all the good that Gideon had done for Israel. So why did God send this evil spirit? Because that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid on Avimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hand to kill his brother. They encouraged him and they gave him money to kill his brothers. So these two verses right here describe what's going to happen in the rest of the chapter. It's only three times. So God's only mentioned three places in this whole section. Right here, and then right the last couple of the last, I think two out of the last three verses. So you're not going to see that it's not going to look like the Lord is directing all this happening. What you're going to see is people doing what people do, right? And that's where this is going. But we're supposed to notice that the Lord is doing this, right? The Lord is making this happen, even though if you miss these two verses, you're not going to see it until the very end. You're not going to see how this all happens. So the Lord is going to take vengeance on Avimelech and on the men of Shechem for what they did to his brothers. It seems quite fitting to me, and quite instructive, that this is an extremely long chapter. 57 verses. We're going to spend 3 weeks on it, and so we're not going to see the conclusion of it tonight. But it serves as a reminder that sometimes it seems like God's justice, God's vengeance, take way too long. We think, how could God do this? How could God let this kind of thing go on? People say that all kind of thing. How could God let people, how could that happen? How long does my loved one have to suffer? Or how long are we going to have people from Tunisia, make it more real, Nigeria, suffering as for their faith? Afghanistan, how long? Or you just get killed. North Korea, you get killed if you're a believer. But Psalms is full of questions like that. How long does this go on? Randy read one from Revelation today. How long before you're going to avenge the blood of the martyrs? Speaking of the martyrs that are in heaven. So we should always remember this, though, from Deuteronomy 32. Vengeance is mine, and retribution. In due time, their foot will slip. In God's time, their foot will slip. For the day of their calamity is near, and the impending things are hastening upon them. Why? Because the Lord will vindicate his people. And he will have compassion on his servants when he sees that their strength is gone. And there's none remaining, bond or free. It'll look like the bitter end, often. And the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops because they've got this spirit, this harmful spirit, this evil spirit between them. And they robbed all who passed by along the way. And it was told to Abimelech. So something's going there. They've set up these, there's debate about exactly what this means. They've set up some kind of an ambush, either for him or against his wishes. Some say that it isn't trying to actually get him, but it's against what he wanted them to do. But we'll see. Arrival to Abimelech arises. So this is the second paragraph. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved to Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. And they went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held a festival, and they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech, and who are we of Shechem, that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? And is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him? Would that, or I wish that, this people were under my hand. Then I would remove Abimelech. And I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out." Okay, so the rival to Abimelech arises. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives. So he's coming into the town where they made Abimelech king. He's the rival. This is the rival, Gaal. We don't know anything about him except what's in this story. Nothing else. But from the story, we can tell that he and his relatives were apparently native to Shechem, or at least descendants of people who were in there for a long time. So I'd always bring up names. So Gaal has several possible meanings that it could be based on. None of them stands out as it's got to be this one. But it does rhyme with Baal, the god that they worshipped. And don't forget that I mentioned last time that wherever it says the leaders of Shechem here, it really says the Baalei Shechem. So the Baals of Shechem. They're like, it means like master or owner or lord. So the rulers of that place are called Baals, probably just because this is the worst. This is the only place that's like this in Judges. It is in other places where that word is used in that sense, but only this way in Judges, certainly tying it to the Baal worship. So we're going to see, though, that he apparently is descended from the founder of the town. Gaal is. So he shows up, and he says this, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in here. He shows up, and he's one of them, right? That's what he's claiming. And so what do? They put their confidence in him. And then this. And they went out into the field and gathered their grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their god, that would be Baal Berit, or El Berit, God Berit, God of the covenant, or Baal of the covenant, and ate and drank. And while they were doing that, they reviled Abimelech. They have a spirit, an evil spirit, a harmful spirit between them and Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him?" So he's making a distinction here. Who is this guy that you've anointed king? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? In other words, Abimelech really isn't one of us. I know he sold himself as being one of us when he came to town, because he said, "What's better, that you should have the 70 sons of Jerubbaal rule you, or one? And don't forget that I'm your bone and flesh." His mother was from there. He was not. Jerubbaal is Gideon, who is an Israelite. And they're saying, Abimelech, because he's mixed blood, he's a half-breed, he's not really one of us. I'm one of us. And is not Zebul his officer? So we're going to see that we don't know anything about him either, except for what's in this chapter. But he is the ruler of the town. So apparently Avimelech's on to bigger, better things. And this guy is ruling the town. And maybe he might not be too popular. Otherwise, why would you try to disparage him? But he does. Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him? In other words, he's telling the people of Shechem, serve the founder of Shechem. Hamor shows up in Genesis 33 and 34. So it's probably either that's his name or that's a title, but he's the founder of Shechem. Long, hundreds of years before this, they're tracing it back to the beginning of this city. That we're going to serve him. We're going to serve the people who were from this town originally, and they would have all been Canaanites. There were no Israelites there those years before Jacob camped next to them. So Gaal is, he can trump Avimelech's, "I'm one of you," with, "No, I'm a really one of you." He gained their confidence. This is how it seems to go, that we like to have leaders who are like us. We have confidence in leaders who we think are like us. And we follow them because we think they're like us. And I don't think we should miss that. This is how we get Canaanized. Right? We want a leader like us. We latch on to somebody because we think he's like us. And then we let him lead us. It's like this spiral. It's why we can say things like, "Well, the people look like their leaders." Or we can say this: "The leaders look like the people." You get what we get what we deserve in our leaders. People talk like that kind of thing all the time. But that must be, last time I talked about this new thing where you've got basically a criminal who likes to abuse women, it sounds like, is running for Senate in Maine because he's like us, right? That's the argument. But that desire is apparently very, very, very strong, to have a leader like us. It works here in Judges. So I'm going to pick on myself and other people. What do they call President Trump? a populist. Why? He's like the people. The people are like him. We kind of look forward. He tells it like it is, right? I wish I could think that way. I wish I could think that fast. He's not afraid to say what he thinks. All things that we like to think. All things that we kind of aspire to. He's like it. I just like where he stands on the issues. The issues that matter to me. Some have, in order to maintain this delusion, that he's one of us. You know, I think Donald Trump's really a Christian. I mean, I know he's a little rough on the edges, but I think he's really a Christian. I've mentioned this years ago. I had somebody out at our house, and they were just talking about the character doesn't matter thing that I brought up last time. Character doesn't matter. I mean, how much does God care really about sexual immorality anyway? That was the argument in favor of Donald Trump. So again, I've voted for Donald Trump, lay it on the table, 3 times, right? If I were going back, I'd vote for him again. Considering the circumstances. But we need to watch out for this. He's just like us. So here's a good example. So apparently this last week, there were several articles about this, several sources about Trump's interview with Axios. And I read it several places and did my best to kind of put together how this went, and here's what it says. Basically, when he was asked what the war had taught him about the limits to his own power, he responded this way: "There are no limits. No, none. I haven't learned that lesson yet. I know there are, but there are no limits. We defeated them totally militarily." And after some time, some more questions, he said, "Yeah, there's one thing. My own morality. My own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me. I don't need international law. I'm not going to hurt people." That should make alarms go off in your head. That is a Canaanite answer. Completely. Completely, from beginning to end. There are no limits to my power. My own morality, my own mind. What about the mind of God? What about what God says? How does that line up with biblical truth, his statement there? It does not in any way line up with biblical truth. Zero way. We can vote for him, but we dare not think that we're like him and he's like us as believers, because if we do, we're susceptible to thinking like that, to thinking that this is a good thing that he has said and done. We have to make decisions when we vote about things, and you make decisions about where people stand on the issues, even if you don't agree with them. But we have to watch out. I mean, that's what Judge is about, right? Don't become like Canaanites. "Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him?" would that this people were under my hand. So you get what he's really after here. I want to be king. And if you make me king, I'll remove Abimelech, and I'll tell him, get your army ready and just come out, and then I'll show you who's boss. That's the rival to Abimelech. But he has an ally. An ally of Abimelech warns him. When Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled. And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they are stirring up the city against you. Now, therefore, go by night, you and the people who are with you, and set an ambush in the field. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city, and when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do. In other words, whatever you want. So here's the ally of Abimelech, who warns him of the danger that's coming. So when Zebul, the ruler of the city that I just mentioned, so he's apparently an ally of Abimelech, said earlier that this was the guy that was his officer. He was the guy that Gaal had insulted as his officer. And he is ticked off by Gaal's challenging Abimelech. His anger was kindled. And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they're stirring up the city against you. In other words, he's warning them, here's what's going on, be careful. Now, therefore, here's my plan. He says, go by night, you and the people who are with you, and set an ambush in the field. So, in other words, you set the ambush now. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city. So, crash upon the city. And when the people who are with him come out against you, because remember, he said, tell him to come. He wants to fight him. Gaal does, right? You may do to them as your hand finds. So if you set this upright, you can take advantage of this guy who's trying to take over the city. You can win this battle. And the fourth one, Abimelech and his ally defeat the rival. So this is where the story takes somewhat of a surprising turn. Right, we know that God has sent this harmful spirit, this evil spirit, this spirit of disaster, whatever you want to call it, on Abimelech and on the leaders of Shechem, on the Baals of Shechem. And we know that it's in retribution for what they've done, for killing the 70 sons. And so he's going to come after both the people of Shechem who did that, and on Abimelech himself. So this would seem like the perfect place for it to happen. It's not going to happen here. It doesn't happen yet. So Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose by night and set an ambush against Shechem in four companies, and Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city, and Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, look, people are coming down from the mountaintops. And Zebul said to him, you mistake the shadow of the mountains for men. And Gaal spoke again and said, look, people are coming to town from the center of the land, and one company is coming from the direction of the diviner's oak. And Zebul said to him, where is your mouth now? You who said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the people whom you despised? Go out now and fight with them. And Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him. and many fell wounded, but up to the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived in Arumah. And Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not dwell at Shechem. So Abimelech and his ally, they actually defeat this rival. So Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose up by night and set an ambush against Shechem in four companies, just what Zebul had told him to do. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city. And Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush. In other words, they were doing exactly what Zebul told him to do. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, "Look, people are coming down from the mountaintop." So the rival, Gaal, sees them coming, and he says to the commander of the army, or the ruler of the city, I mean, the captain or the his officer of Abimelech, "Look, people are coming down there." And he says, "No, they're not. It's just the shadow on the mountain. You're mistaken, the shadow on the mountains." So he's got this planned all out in his head how this is going to go. And Gaal spoke again and said, "Look, people are coming down from the center of the land, and one company is coming from the direction of the diviner's oak," which would be some kind of a pagan way to discern the future, right? Then Zebul said to him, "Where is your mouth now? You who said, 'Who is Abimelech that we should serve him?'" In other words, Zebul knows they've got him. "Are not these people the people whom you despise? Go out now and fight with them." And Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him. And many fell wounded or slain that day up to the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived in Arumah, and Zebul drove out Abimelech. Drove out Gaal, excuse me, and his relatives so that they could not dwell in Shechem. So what seems like that this is, it seems like this is far from the Lord avenging the blood of Ahimelech's 70 brothers. In fact, he wins the battle. A rival has arisen to take him out, and he wins. Being on, you know, being who he is, I mean, you just think, you know, probably he's kind of thinking, well, there's no limit to my power. We've got this guy coming up, he's got these groups, and it was easy. And he apparently goes and lives safely, looks like, at this town of Arumah. Probably not far away, but I think the best guesses are there. It's about 5 miles away. He's safe there. And the Gaal is gone now. Never heard from again. So that was it. That's the whole story of Gaal. He's just gone. He's done. Never hear from him again. And so what about the 70? What about the 70 sons? How long before the Lord makes this right? How long before that happens? Psalm 13, 1 and 2. "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? And we're to think this, though. Vengeance is mine and retribution. In due time, their foot will slip. Seems like a long time, but the day of their calamity is near. And the impending things are hastening upon them. For the Lord will vindicate his people. Let's pray.